Chapter 66. Giardino found Pitt in his hangar, sitting comfortably in the back seat of an immense open touring car, his feet propped sideways on a rear door. Giardino couldn't help admiring the classic lines of the tourer. Italian built in 1925 with coachwork by Cesare Sala, the red torpedo-bodied Di Sotto Fraschini sported long flared fenders, a disappearing top, and a coiled cobra on the radiator cap. Pitt was contemplating a blackboard mounted on a tripod about 10 feet from the car. A large nautical chart depicting the entire inland water route was tacked to the outer frame. Across the board he had written several notations and what appeared to Giardino as a list of ships. "I've just come from the Admiral's office," Giardino said. "What's the latest?" Pitt asked, his eyes never leaving the blackboard. "The Joint Chiefs of Staff have thrown the armed forces into the hunt. Combined with agents from the FBI and CIA, they should be able to cover every inch of shoreline by tomorrow evening." "On the ground, by the sea, and in the air," Pitt murmured uninterestedly. "From Maine to Florida." "Why the sour grapes?" "A damned waste of time. The barge isn't there," Pitt said, flipping a piece of chalk in the air. Giardino shot him a quizzical look. "What are you babbling about? The barge has to be in there somewhere." "Not necessarily." "You're saying they're searching in the wrong place?" "If you were the Bougainvilles, you'd expect an exhaustive whole-hog hunt, right?" "Elementary reasoning," Giardino said loftily. "Me, I'd be more inclined to camouflage the barge under a grove of trees, hide it inside an enclosed waterfront warehouse, or alter the exterior to look like a giant chicken coop or whatever. Seems to me concealment is the logical way to go." Pitt laughed. "Your chicken coop brainstorm, now that's class. You got a better idea?" Pitt stepped out of the Isota, went to the blackboard and folded over the inland waterway chart, revealing another chart showing the coastline along the Gulf of Mexico. "As it happens, yes, I do." He tapped his finger on a spot circled in red ink. "The barge holding Margolin and Lauren captive is somewhere around here." Giardino moved closer and examined the marked area. Then he looked at Pitt with an expression usually reserved for people who held signs announcing the end of the world. "New Orleans?" "Below New Orleans," Pitt corrected. "I judge it to be moored there now." Giardino shook his head. "I think your brakes went out. You're telling me Bougainville towed a barge from Charleston around the tip of Florida and across the Gulf to the Mississippi River, almost 1,700 miles in less than 4 days? Sorry, pal, the tug isn't built that can push a barge that fast."
"Granted," Pitt allowed, "but suppose they cut off 700 miles?"
"How?" inquired Giardino, his voice a combination of doubt and sarcasm. "By installing wheels and driving it cross-country?"
"No joke," Pitt said seriously.
"By towing it through the recently opened Florida Cross-State Canal from Jacksonville on the Atlantic to Crystal River on the Gulf of Mexico, shortcutting the entire southern half of the state." The revelation sparked Giardino. He peered at the chart again, studying the scale. Then, using his thumb and forefinger as a pair of dividers, he roughly measured the reduced distance between Charleston and New Orleans. When he finally turned and looked at Pitt, he wore a sheepish smile.
"It works."
Then the smile quickly faded.
"So what does it prove?"
"The Bougainvilles must have a heavily guarded dock facility and terminal where they unload their illegal cargoes. It probably sits on the banks of the river somewhere between New Orleans and the entrance to the Gulf."
"The Mississippi Delta?"
Giardino showed his puzzlement. "How'd you pull that little number out of the hat?"
"Take a look," Pitt said, pointing to the list of ships on the blackboard and then reading them off. "The Pilot Town, Belchasse, Buras, Venice, Boothville, Chalmette. All ships under foreign registry, but at one time owned by Bougainville Maritime. I fail to make the connection."
"Take another look at the chart. Every one of those ships is named after a town along the River Delta."
"A symbolic cipher?"
"The only mistake the Bougainvilles ever let slip, using a code to designate their area of covert operations."
Giardino peered closer.
"By God, it fits like a girl in tight shorts."
Pitt rapped the chart with his knuckles.
"I'll bet my Isotta Fraschini against your Bronco that's where we'll find Lauren."
"You're on.
Run over to the Numa Air Terminal and sign out a Learjet. I'll contact the Admiral and explain why we're flying to New Orleans."
Giardino was already heading toward the door.
"I'll have the plane checked out and ready for takeoff when you get there," he called over his shoulder.
Pitt hurried up the stairs to his apartment and threw some clothes in an overnight bag. He opened a gun cabinet and took out an old Colt Thompson submachine gun, serial number 8545, and two loaded drums of .45-caliber cartridges and laid them in a violin case. Then he picked up the phone and called Sandecker's office. He identified himself to Sandecker's private secretary and was put through. "Admiral?"
"Dirk?"
"I think I've got the barge area fixed."
"Where?"
"The Mississippi River Delta. Al and I are leaving for there now."
"What makes you think it's in the Delta?"
"Half guess, half deduction, but it's the best lead we've got." Sandecker hesitated before replying.
"You'd better hold up," he said quietly.
"Hold up? What are you talking about?"
"Alan Moran is demanding the search be called off."
Pitt was stunned.
"What in hell for?"
"He says it's a waste of time and taxpayers' money to continue because Vince Margolin is dead."
"Moran is full of crap."
"He has the clothes Margolin was wearing the night they all disappeared to back up his claim. We still have Lauren to think about."
"Moran says she's dead, too."
Pitt felt like he was sinking in quicksand.
"He's a damned liar."
"Maybe so, but if he's right about Margolin, you're defaming the next president of the United States." "The day that little creep takes the oath is the day I turn in my citizenship."
"You probably won't be alone," Sandecker said sourly, "but your personal feelings don't alter the situation."
Pitt stood unbudging. "I'll call you from Louisiana."
"I was hoping you'd say that. Stay in close contact. I'll do everything I can to help from this end."
"Thanks, you old fraud.
Get your ass in gear and tell Giordino to stop swiping my cigars."
Pitt grinned and hung up. He finished packing and hurried from the hangar. 3 minutes after he drove off, his phone began to ring. 200 miles away, an ashen-faced Sal Cascio despairingly waited in vain for an answer.